The North Sound Energy Week with Active Payroll. Become part of an award-winning team. Go to activepayroll.com/careers for your next move.
Hello and welcome to the North Sound Energy Week podcast. I'm Finlay Duncan. This week, events were dominated not in the northeast, but in the dispute at Grangemouth Oil Refinery on the Firth of Forth. A leading expert warns the UK government to properly assess the risks of carbon capture and storage technology, and Air Accident investigators release their latest update on August's fatal Super Puma crash off Shetland. But first, with less than a year to go till the independence referendum, the body which represents one of Scotland's most important industries says it's not entering the debate. Oil and Gas UK has just completed a six-month campaign to raise awareness of the sector's importance to the economy both north and south of the border. Communications Director Tricia O'Reilly has this message for those on either side of the argument.
The only thing that we would say to both governments, you know, governments on both sides, is that they should work very closely together to make sure that there is no interruption in the flow of investment into the basin.
The first of six new helicopters is being introduced by a North Sea operator. Bristow's using the Augusta Westland craft, which can hold 16 passengers, to support GDF Suez's expanding operations in the central and southern North Sea. It'll come into operation from the second quarter of next year. A leading academic's written to Westminster's Energy and Climate Change Committee, urging them to consider the risks of carbon capture and storage technology. Whilst not opposed to CCS, geophysicist Dr. James Ferdin from Bristol University says MPs must make sure a rigorous assessment's done on projects such as the one proposed at Peterhead Power Station. It, along with a scheme in Yorkshire, is a preferred bidder for £1 billion of UK government funding. Dr. Ferdin told North Sound experiences in the US have shown earthquakes could be triggered when large volumes of fluid are injected into the seabed. He's welcoming the process so far undertaken by Westminster.
Obviously, the UK is proposing setting up carbon capture and storage sites where CO2 is injected into the subsurface in order to mitigate the effects of climate change. Now, the concern is that we've seen a few case examples in the US where deep injection of fluids, in particular waste water from oil and gas operations, has triggered earthquakes that have been felt by the population. And so our intentions, in fact, is not to say that carbon capture and storage can't happen. It definitely should happen. But that the risk of triggering seismicity needs to be taken into account, and before sites are chosen, modelling studies should be done to ensure that the risks are minimised, and then during injection of CO2, any seismicity should be monitored so that we can pick up at the earliest possible opportunity any risk that anything untoward is happening.
And in terms of seismic activity, also Peterhead is one of two proposed bids going for the CCS technology. Would it be something that people would notice potentially?
Whether or not someone would feel an earthquake depends on how far offshore the site is and how large the earthquake is. So it's not clear at that stage. The studies haven't been done as to what would be felt or not felt. I think it's unlikely that an earthquake that's large enough to cause any damage would occur, but we've seen already with a lot of projects that even if the earthquakes aren't large enough to cause damage, the resulting kind of public discussion often leads to these projects getting shut down. We've seen with shale gas extraction already in England, you know, a very small earthquake triggered, but years of delays to the project as a result of that because people felt it. Also, then you have to consider the hazard to your actual infrastructure on the site. So even though you may be a long way offshore, too far away for people to feel an earthquake, obviously you've got rigs, you've got pipelines, and you need to, you know, consider the seismic hazard that any induced seismicity could pose to those as well.
Off the coast of Peterhead, of course, a lot of the UK's oil and gas infrastructure, could they also potentially be affected by any seismic activity?
Yeah, potentially. And so that's why we need to, you know, study the risks of this and determine what any risk would be.
You know, you don't want the projects to be abandoned. What are the real benefits of CCS technology?
Well, it gives us a way to continue to consume fossil fuels without creating, you know, CO2 emissions that damage the climate. Now, I'm not a climate scientist, so, you know, the the climate scientists are pretty certain that climate change is happening, that we really need to do something about it. Unfortunately, at the moment, a lot of the technologies that we want to bring in to reduce our CO2 emissions are not yet at a stage where they can provide all our needs. So, you know, renewable technologies, you know, they're great, but they're not coming online anywhere near fast enough to actually produce all our energy. So in the meantime, we're going to be burning fossil fuels for quite some time to come. It would be irresponsible to allow the lights to go out. But in that being the case, then you need to do something with the CO2 emissions rather than let them go into the atmosphere. And one option, as we've seen, is to re-inject them below the ground into either old oil and gas reservoirs or similar formations that are pretty similar but just don't have any oil or gas in. Because we know these formations have been able to trap and store large volumes of gas for millions and millions and millions of years of geological time. So, you know, we'd expect them to be able to do that again going forward into the future. And that's why we want to do carbon capture and storage.
Meanwhile, Shell's chief executive says it could be decades before America's shale gas revolution is replicated in Europe. Peter Vosser has admitted their shale projects haven't been as successful as previously thought, with more development needed to maximise benefits. A Scottish MEP is hitting out at an EU vote which will see an increase in regulations for shale gas projects. The European Parliament wants environmental checks to be extended to so-called fracking developments, which extract shale from the ground. The Conservative Struan Stevenson says this could see us importing the mineral from other countries, despite potentially sitting on millions of tonnes of it.
I will predict now that we will start importing cheap shale gas from America, while Britain is sitting on millions of tonnes of shale gas, which would be enough to keep our business and industry going for the next 200 years, and we're not going to be able to exploit it because of ridiculous regulations. We are not hitting our carbon emission targets because we're building silly fans and windmills all over the place, which are useless, thinking that we're going green, and now we're attacking shale gas, the one sure way of being able to stop burning coal. It's an absolute mess. The whole report was a mess. That's why there were hundreds of amendments voted on in Strasbourg. That's why you know, we were trying our damnedest to stop the Greens on the left, who were trying everything to make it difficult for shale gas exploitation to take place. It means that we will be less competitive than countries outside the EU. It means that any type of exploration for shale gas whatsoever will be subject to a full screening, a full impact assessment. It's just putting hurdles in the way of business and industry. When you consider in America that the full exploitation of shale gas has now not only cut gas prices in half and made America now competitive, it's kick-started its economy again. The current legislation says that any shale gas exploration that is extracting more than 500,000 cubic metres a day has to go through the full impact assessment procedure. Now, after the vote in Strasbourg, it's any shale gas fracking, any exploration at all, to even in a tiny exploratory wells to see if there is shale gas, will require a full economic impact assessment. This is just environmental impact assessment. It's crazy.
Shell have suffered a setback in a development in the Republic of Ireland. A court in Dublin squashed a revised licence given for a gas terminal at Ballinaboy, which forms part of the Corrib gas pipeline project in County Mayo. The energy firm's reportedly studying the ruling.
The North Sound Energy Week with Active Payroll. Become part of an award-winning team. Go to activepayroll.com/careers for your next move.
This week was dominated by events at the Grangemouth oil refinery. The dispute centres on the treatment of a union convener by bosses at the plant's owner, INEOS. Staff called off strikes to protect the future of the site, but management put it into cold shutdown and say it won't reopen until Unite the Union members sign up to a no-strings-attached assurance that they won't strike before Christmas and will sign up to changes to their pay and pensions. Site manager Gordon Grant explains.
Plants will stay down. That's very disappointing. The management team, the employees, I believe, want these plants to be up and running, and we just need a very, very simple assurance of no action between now and the end of that consultation period.
But Unite boss Pat Rafferty says they're being held to ransom and will only pledge not to walk out if the company commits to negotiations.
You're standing here, we're willing to go to that negotiating table right now to sit and work if we need to 24/7 to try and reach a settlement with the company.
This worker, who doesn't want to be named, says there's a complete breakdown of trust with management.
Oh, they're feeding us out stuff, how the unions are bad people kind of thing. And that's a kind of concerning thing, is we don't believe what the directors at this site are saying.
Meanwhile, a leading energy expert urged us not to panic buy petrol as the dispute continued. Aberdeen University Petroleum Economics Professor Alex Kemp says there are plenty of supplies remaining. I spoke with him this week and discussed the potential implications of the shutdown.
The Fortis pipeline goes down to Grangemouth and then it goes to Kinneil Export Terminal. So the Fortis pipeline takes oil from 84 fields in the North Sea, together they constitute around 40% of total North Sea oil production. So at the moment we're talking about 300,000 barrels per day or so. In addition, those oil fields, those 84 fields, produce a lot of associated gas. 25% of our gas supplies are in those 84 fields. That gas generally goes to other terminals like St. Fergus. Okay, so the Fortis pipeline system is extremely important for the whole of the North Sea. So Grangemouth is now closed. So the obvious thing to do is just to export all the oil from the Kinneil terminal. But there is a potential problem, namely that the terminal needs steam and power. And that power up till now has been supplied from the Grangemouth refinery. So a big question will be whether INEOS, the operator of the refinery, will continue to supply steam and power to the terminal.
And so this shutdown continues. Could we see an impact on the supply to the network? I mean, it's not just a case of rerouting the Forties, is it?
Oh, no, that would be longer term and very dramatic. So it's a question of the power and the steam for the terminal. So at the moment, they are supplied from Grangemouth. So an issue is whether or not INEOS will continue to supply steam and power to the terminal. It's possible that alternative power supplies could be obtained, perhaps from the national grid. I'm thinking that, to get alternative supplies of steam might be practically more difficult. So that will be one of the issues of the moment.
INEOS saying that the plant's losing the millions every month. I mean, how is that the case?
The economics of the refineries at the moment is rather difficult for a lot of refineries in the UK and in Western Europe more widely. They haven't had worthwhile profit margins for some time. In more recent months, this problem has been exacerbated by a lot of product, that is the petrol and diesel imports coming from America. In America, there's been a big upsurge in production of oil from shale. So the refineries on the East Coast have been refining a lot of that, and they are able to export without restriction petroleum products. There are restrictions on export of crude, but not on petroleum products. So they've been coming over here they've been adding to the supply. So the European market is well supplied, and that also means that the refineries in the UK are having financial problems.
In terms of this current dispute between INEOS and the unions, what I mean, what are the potential implications for consumers if this dispute, you know, rumbles on?
Well, I think that for the short term, the availability of imports is on such a scale that there shouldn't be a problem for motorists, for example, because at the moment, import availability is actually very good. The only thing that could change that would be if there were a lot of panic buying, and holding by individual motorists. So that could change things, but without panic buying, I think that the market is really well supplied, and imports are fairly abundant actually at the moment. So it will depend on how the consuming motorist reacts to this problem.
In a statement on the dispute, Oil and Gas UK say it would seem that the indications are that the steam line to the Kinneil site will be protected. However, we would strongly urge INEOS and the unions to resolve their differences to prevent any future disruptions. Elsewhere, Scottish Gas this week became the latest big energy firm to announce a price hike. It's increasing the cost of electricity by nearly 10.5% next month, and gas will go up by 8.4%. The announcement was made during a debate in the Commons about fuel prices. Here's UK Energy Minister Michael Fallon.
The party opposite left us with the Big Six. They started with 14 retailers. We ended up with Big Six. The answer is more competition, easier switching, and ensuring that the most vulnerable people are placed on the lowest possible tariff.
New research has been commissioned into the economic contribution of the oil and gas industry. Oil and Gas UK has appointed Ernst & Young to assess the billions generated annually by the supply chain. More than 1,000 companies are due to be included in the study, with results expected in March next year. On Friday, it was revealed the actions of the pilots involved in a fatal North Sea helicopter crash are being looked at by air accident investigators. In their latest update, the AAIB says when the Super Puma came into land at Shetland's Sunbury Airport, a drop in airspeed was unobserved by the crew. Four people were killed when the CHC-operated L2 model fell out of the sky in August. The report adds that the commander of the chopper saw the sea but wasn't able to stop its descent. Sunbury Airport's operators are also being recommended to provide a water rescue capability suitable for all tidal conditions because of delays in getting to the wreckage. CHC's Vice President of Safety and Quality, Duncan Trapp, says they're helping with the investigation as it continues.
The AAIB Bulletin, which is the latest in AAIB publications received today, helps us move along the path of the investigation. I think it brings a degree of clarity and context in terms of the lead-up to the tragic accident, and it also provides some more detail about the conduct of the flight and what led up to the event. Still some questions unanswered clearly, which is the focus of CHC's internal investigation as well as the AAIB ongoing investigation and the Police Scotland inquiries, all of which we are contributing and cooperating with, but very much welcome the latest publication from the AAIB.
How concerned are you by it noting that a drop in airspeed was unobserved by the crew?
Yeah, clearly that's the area where AAIB focus continues to look at, and likewise the CHC investigation is going to explore. So the report tells us what happened, but as yet doesn't tell us why that happened. So that's going to be the focus of both AAIB and CHC investigations, which are currently underway.
What for CHC in terms of its operation, are the main key points that you're still unsure of when it comes to operating these craft?
Well, we've got a great deal of experience in the aircraft, both the L2 and indeed all of the types, regardless of the manufacturer. So we are a global company, well experienced in operating helicopters in the most demanding of environments. And to that end, we have maintenance procedures and operational procedures that underpin all of our operations and have done for many years. So we are confident that we know how to operate them. Clearly, there's an opportunity, as with all events, to learn and to see where things can be further improved. But really, the key is to work with AAIB, try to piece together the pieces of the jigsaw that are missing, and that revolves around the loss of the airspeed and the recovery from that position.
They've mentioned that, I mean, although the investigation is still ongoing, there doesn't appear to have been a technical fault that would have been causal to the accident. Is that quite reassuring for CHC as you continue to operate other Super Pumas?
I think the reconfirmation from the latest AIB report that there is no indication of any technical problem with that aircraft in particular, or indeed any of the of that type, is reassuring and reinforces the position that was taken by all the operators, the HSSG and the authorities, to return the aircraft to service. So that bit is welcome news. Clearly, it remains a tragic accident. We are continuing to pour a huge amount of resources, focus and effort into to finding out why the tragedy happened, and every day is a constant reminder about the loss that's occurred, so our sympathies continue to be with the family. We're hopeful that the survivors are making strong progress in their recovery, but rest assured we're not giving up in trying to identify what happened and why.
And what are CHC doing to reassure the workforce that are getting up in similar choppers at the moment?
Yeah, CHC, working with the other operators and the HSSG, continue to contribute towards the communication piece. There's a number of strands in terms of briefings, in terms of fact sheets, in terms of face-to-face briefings from the air crew to reassure all of the passengers, regardless of what aircraft type and what operator, that everything we do is done with an eye to safety first and everything else second. So there's a lot of communication ongoing, and it will continue to be ongoing, because this isn't something that can be turned on for a month and then accepted as being back on track. We've got a lot of work to do. We're doing a lot of work, and we hope it's making a difference in terms of reassuring the offshore workforce that everything focuses on safety.
And finally, Aberdeen is to host a major student summit on energy. The University of Aberdeen, backed by the Scottish Government, City Council and the AECC and others, successfully won the bid to hold the European Student Energy Summit next summer. The event, which will see young people and industry leaders gather in the North East, takes place on the 19th and 20th of June. Laura Dimitrova's Vice Chair of the Organising Committee at the Uni.
We'll be having delegates from all over Europe, students from undergraduate to PhD levels that want to be the future energy leaders, or just having an interest in the industry and are thinking of pursuing that interest further. And basically it would mean that we would give the opportunity of a lot of companies to network with students to inspire them. Also, the whole goal of the event is to inspire as many students as possible to build and to start working towards a more sustainable future. Aberdeen, it would just, I think it's going to be a great opportunity because of its high profile as the energy capital of Europe. I think that's just going to be even better in terms of the future of the city.
As part of the student team that was behind this bid, I mean, going forward, what does this mean now that you guys are going to host this?
Well, it will mean that our university is going to get a lot of exposure, more than ever, I hope, especially the energy department, which I think coincides perfectly with the aspirations of the university to become a European leader in providing education in the energy sector. It would also mean that it will strengthen the links between the universities and non-governmental organizations, companies and other actors in the sector.
Don't forget, for all the latest news from the energy sector, tune into our special Energy Zone bulletins each weekday morning on North Sound during breakfast. That's it for this week. This has been the North Sound Energy Week podcast. I'm Finlay Duncan.
The North Sound Energy Week with Active Payroll. Become part of an award-winning team. Go to activepayroll.com/careers for your next move.